sitting there, though, is still standing.
I think they run into the same kind of problem, too, because if you allege the violation as being under 223.1,
so maybe we can just look at the full context of this and talk about it and go over that in a minute, because we're powerless to do anything at this juncture with respect to the plea. But I notice in section 2.1, section 2 sub 1, that we talk about intent, but we do away with intent to deprive permanently, as is in the present law.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming back in the definitions where we're...
Definition of deprive.
Yeah, definition of deprive and appropriate, where we use permanently, that takes care of it. Now, is this...
That was my understanding.
That was the intent, certainly, in the draft.
You haven't necessarily done away with permanently, but you have also, of course, with the change in the definition of the crime allows for the possibility that it's such an extended period of time that it might have long been permanent.
Now, we're saying a person commits larceny when with intent to deprive another of property. Wrongfully takes, obtains, or withholds such property from an owner thereof. Getting back to what Professor Arthur said, use the word deprive. Is this exclusive? Are we saying that you don't commit larceny if you appropriate?
Or to appropriate property.
Oh, wait, yeah, all right. I'm sorry. All right, now,
how could you appropriate it without depriving the owner of it? I'm wondering if both of those are necessary in either one, what do you say?
You want to comment on that, Captain?
Derived, of course, from the which one is it? The Montague Code of New York.
That's taken from the New York. And the reason, and let me read you the commentary from the New York draft. Deprived and appropriate are essential to a definition of larcenous intent, consisting of an intent to deprive or appropriate. The thrust of these terms is that they connote a purpose on the part of the thief to exert permanent or virtually permanent control over the property taken, or to cause permanent or virtually permanent loss to the owner of the possession and use thereof. As under former law, it is this feature that distinguishes larceny from other offenses, which, though having a larcenous flavor, are satisfied by a lesser intent to obtain temporary possession or use of property or to cause temporary loss to the owner. That's all they have to say about those two terms. Now, I think there is an overlap there.
Well, for friends in my head, when we were talking about section one a while ago, and it did seem to me that there's a chance, although I can't describe it, that you need the overlap, but I can't describe it.
Not only a question of depriving, but a question also of
proof on the part of the state.
You mean if you included it?
Yeah, all you need to do is prove, deprive the owner of it.
Well, now, wait a minute. You say that's what the model penal code does.
On page 162?
Yeah, it says deprive means to withhold property another permanently or for so extended a period as to appropriate a major portion of its economic value.
I use the term appropriate there, but then by using the term appropriate there, then all you need to use is deprive in the definition of the offense.
I don't disagree with this, but it just occurred to me by defining appropriate here, we're spelling it out with specificity and maybe obviating a number of appeals on the question of what if, how you interpret appropriate.
Well, I think that's the effect of the larger half. Expands it. The language is very similar to the model penal code, but it just does go on then to say what we mean by appropriate.
I notice in your definition of section 2.1, you say a person commits larceny when with intent to deprive another of property. Now, this is without regard to the ownership of that property, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And in the present law, larceny is the unlawful taking of the property of another, denoting ownership.
Well, it goes on to say the guy has to withhold it from the owner.
You may be stealing from the thief. Whether your priorities are right.
Oh, yeah.
Or he may be stealing from somebody that thought he owned it and didn't. And then he's not guilty now.
Oh, but historically, larceny is a crime against possession and not against ownership.
I know, and this makes it against the owner.
I don't think we should make it a crime against the owner alone. This is much too limited.
Right. Well, of course, we define owner over under section 1 as a person who has a right to possession thereof superior to that of the taker, obtainer, or the holder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Which is giving a little bit of an artificial meaning to the word owner, maybe, but
it's artificial, but yeah. it's consistent with the case law.
Right.
Traditionally, the case law says this is what it means.
Whereas the model penal code uses the term property of another, in the sense that property includes
the possessory right.
Mm-hmm.
That is a possessory right, the property of another.
Well, is anybody troubled by the...
No, I'm
no,
not.
No, you're not. All right.
I think it's right in my touch.
Okay. I raised the question in the definitions about the term take, because you use take in 2.1. You had defined obtain, you defined withhold, you didn't define take. I don't think it's necessary to define take, but take, of course, implies aspartation, doesn't it? We're doing away with aspartation, so is it necessary to have take in here?
You're still going to have fact situations where there is a taking.
Yeah, you can be guilty here either by taking or obtaining or withholding.
So,
with
that in mind, do we want to define taking?
I wouldn't think so.
Okay. Did you consider this, Kathleen?
Yes, we did. We did talk about it.
And then you decided to discard it.
Right, because the possibility that you are talking about the old common law crime of taking, and you have case law defining that, and we were kind of lost trying to find an all-inclusive verb that would these little refinements of taking, obtaining.
I don't have any quarrel with sub 2.
But isn't limited to, or isn't includes?
Yes. Let's wait till Ed Elder gets back and we'll move that. Put that together. Is 2 redundant of 1? One, you say a person commits larceny when with intent to deprive another property or appropriate property to himself or a third person he wrongfully takes, obtains, or withholds such property from an owner thereof. And 2 says larceny includes but is not limited to a wrongful taking, obtaining, or withholding of another's property with intent described in subsection 1 of the section committed in any of the following ways. Now, couldn't those two be combined?
You could probably skip from the phrase from the owner thereof, comma, committed in any one of the following ways and be in the same place, wouldn't you, Don? That is
repetition. Or wouldn't it be better to employ 2 so we can get this, but is not limited to? Say, large concludes, but is not limited to a wrongful taking, obtaining, or withholding of another's property with intent to deprive another property of appropriate property to himself or a third person committed in any one of the following ways.
Don't you mean the phrase that a person commits larceny when he does something as opposed to larceny constitutes any one of the following acts? It's not maybe solely a question of clarity of language, but the logic of it. You're accusing, going to accuse someone of having committed the crime of larceny. So this is an old problem in drafting criminal law problems or statutes. But the model penal code, generally has taken the position that a person does so and so when he does such and such. Our criminal code very often follows the warning of no person shall. And if someone once pointed out, you wouldn't be in court if they obeyed it. So it's a rather illogical prohibition.
Yeah. Well,
or any person who, yeah.
In some of our statutes now use the phrase or the term is guilty of.
Another, you've got quite a variation. Or the other one, of course, is it is unlawful to do such and such.
Well, you obviously had a reason for putting 1 and 2 in. Both, as I'm sure you considered it.
Well,
and
the reason I put it in initially was I just felt that it spelled it out more plainly what we were including as large misconduct. Although I think that 1 and 2 could be combined.
But it kind of described it because it is a basic change in expression, statutory expression that we're not used to. And it kind of describes what we're doing. Anticipating defenses.
Yes.
We're talking in on section 2 of the larceny draft with respect to sub 1 and sub 2 being somewhat redundant.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
And what you saw on that, Professor?
Yeah.
I
Well, it's really a question of just drafting technique, isn't it, more than anything,
mm-hmm.
Kathleen?
Yeah.
Well, what do you think? Do you think that they should be combined?
Well, I think they could even be combined. The reason I was raising my eyebrow was that the change of whether you combine them by starting off with 2 or starting off. mean, we could probably end up in the same place if we said a person commits larceny when with intent to dump to dump. He wrongfully takes the property, such property from an owner thereof, comma, in any one of the following ways, by conduct and by conduct, by and so forth. And leave out the first part of two that was bothering Senator Burns.
I agree that this is right semantic approach rather than two like I was thinking earlier. Well, it really doesn't matter to me if
I think this is the safer way to do it.
As she suggests. Well,
it leaves less room for argument.
You agree with that, Ed, basically? Okay, well then let's move. We need to make a formal motion. I think we all agree. Let's move this amendment as recited by Kathleen. And what we'll be essentially doing is eliminating sub 2. Now, we go down to what will now be 1A, and we, in any one of the following ways we need to talk about, by conduct prior to the effective day of this act, as common law larceny by prescriptory taking, common law larceny by thrift, embezzlement, or obtaining property by false pretenses. Now, why do we put that in?
Well, this is to indicate that the common law, the classic common law larceny is still going to be larceny. And more importantly, I think, we spell out that what has heretofore been separate crimes of embezzlement or obtaining, separate statutory crimes, are now, although the elements would be the same, are now larceny.
Mm-hmm.
About the use of embezzlement at this stage. I'm thinking maybe that the model penal code does it in such a way that regardless of whether it used to be embezzlement or not, that it covers the crime. The trouble with embezzlement is that it's historically, it's a purely statutory crime. There was no common law embezzlement. It was purely statutory. So the very first embezzlement took care of only two situations. A situation where it was a taking by a servant. There had to be a master and servant relationship who had rightful possession. And he had to have been entrusted with the thing. Now in the Oregon statute, you come down statute after statute after statute, adding a new relationship, mm-hmm. adding banker, adding agent, and clerk.
Trustee.
Yeah. Every time, over a period of 100 years or so, we would meet and we'd get another relationship included. And in most of them, there still is included a necessity of proving and entrusting. But what if somehow or other I rightfully get possession of somebody else's property, but he didn't really entrust it to me, and I don't have any relationship to him at all? But I've got it, brother, and I burn it up, use it up, eat it, swallow it, drink it, throw it away. Now, does this statute make the guy guilty under these circumstances? I'm not criticizing the draft in the sense of adverse criticism. I'm just simply saying I don't know what we're doing, and I'm worried to that extent. And I don't either. The thing that worries me more is that I really don't know what the model penal code does either. But I've got a hunch that somehow or other it does it by a slightly different scheme.
Well, I think you make an awful good point.
My point is that I'm embarrassed that I don't know what I'm doing, not that I'm trying to stop it.
See, the model penal code doesn't approach it exactly this way. It talks about theft by deception, for example, which is not right, which ostensibly is designed to include all that. What about that, Don?
Well, initially in the Model Penal Code, maybe not initially, but as they evolved this section, they came finally down to a section that did include the use of the term embezzlement and a few of the others. What section was that?
Well,
223.1
down, and
that's the one that came down to change. Yeah. And it was changed. All they say in their comment, in their proposed official draft here, on amendments, is they change the first sentence by inserting a period after offense, line, end of line 2 of subsection 1. Of course, some of their earlier comments, in, I believe attendee draft number 2, indicated their rationale in drafting this was the same as the rationale in these in the New York. Fundamentally, their desire was to eliminate the technical distinction between these crimes.
Sure, that's the thing to be done. One difficulty with heretofore known as embezzlement, though, is that it automatically reenacts every statute we've got on the books now for embezzlement with all the limitations that those imply. It seems to me. I don't know what you really want to do with embezzlement.
Two significant omissions in my mind here. We've omitted conversion. There are specific statutes right now making it a crime to convert. By saying that it includes embezzlement, but doesn't include conversion, are we saying that this no longer is a crime? And then, of course, there's a separate statute for obtaining money by false pretenses.
Well, there is a separate statutory crime of conversion.
Largely by Bailey. And in some states, there's a statute they call fraudulent conversion, which is kind of the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
Now, for some reason, the Model Penal Code has knocked out this long list now, as Don says.
Yeah. We
don't have the exception of embezzlement, is
that
right?
No, they've knocked that out too, apparently.
Well, have they?
Yeah. Now, Don says that if you look at the front of this proposed official draft, and he's right, I'm on page.
On
page
3,
it says section 223.1, change the first sentence by inserting period after offense at end of line 2 of subsection 1. And then that leaves out, heretofore known as larceny, embezzlement, false pretense, extortion, blackmail, fraud, conversion, receiving stolen property, and the like.
Where are you there, Professor?
Where
are you? Oh, yeah.
Well, now,
they've wiped that out.
Now, Don brought that one out on page 164, and then referring back to page 3.
Yeah, they've
wiped out that list.
But I can't tell you why they did it, because we don't have the benefit of their later comments.
Yeah, that's true. We're stuck there. Well, I'm a big help. I raise the bat, and then I don't answer. I don't know how to.
Of course,
too fast here to read what the commission has done about it.
Well, let's take a 5-minute break and let Mildred rest her hand. She's been writing for about an hour and a half.
I don't think the day will ever come when the defense attorney doesn't look for
Hall.
Any old door that he can open.
He will, or you do away with the adversary system. Just about as simple as that.
Yeah.
Either he's going to do that or you do away with the adversary.
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Chairman, do you want us to attempt a restatement of this section, another a redraft on that particular section to see what improvements we could make?
Let's, if it's a consensus of the committee, let's move on and suggest the staff endeavor to redraw section 1 or sub 1 of section 2 and also 1A. Bearing in mind responding to amendment to sub 2 and we're going to have to reconcile sub 1 and sub 2 in the first instance, and then you're going to have to look a little bit longer and harder, I think, at sub A. Now, and I think we can get through quite a bit of this draft too today, and take action on it. But I don't think we're going to be able to take final action on it until our next meeting. And this should be something that you can work on in the interim. Now, if the two members agree with that. Let's go on.
Okay, let's go on.
To B.
Yeah.
And B provides by acquiring property lost, mislaid, or delivered by mistake is provided in Section 3 of this Act. In Section 3, you can read it quicker than I can read it to you. Do we, do we have any comments on that before I ask some questions?
I think it's good, and I'm in favor of it. And I think it represents the model penal code approach, and I think it represents what's the present law in the state of Washington. I think it represents a change from the common law, but a change for the good. Maybe that's a conclusion.
Well, I wonder if the words are broad enough to include any unauthorized exercise of control. Lost or mislaid or delivered by mistake. Might there not be other circumstances under which property of another could be acquired?
I don't think it's intended to. I think it's intended to solve just the mistake, the property obtained by lost, mislaid, or delivered by mistake. I think it's intended just to cover those situations. Now, whether the proposed draft covers the other situations.
Well, of course, now, it, first of all, it eliminates the distinction between lost and mislaid property, and which was an artificial one anyway under the common law. And, if it was lost property, the rationale, and you can correct me on this if I'm wrong, if I don't remember my law correctly, but my impression was that lost property was no longer within the possession of the owner if it was lost.
Yeah.
Whereas mislaid, they felt that it was still, that it is intended.
Where he put it, but he forgot where he
put
it.
He put it there, the owner or the person possessing it had put it there, and it was still under his possession. Therefore, the actor who became involved with this property had a greater duty to the owner or to the prior possession than he did with lost property.
I tend to feel that this entire area is a highly technical, highly historical, and more than that, a school teacher area. That I would disagree in part with the way you phrase it without any criticism again. That common law, if somebody lost some property, such as if it fell out of his office when he's going down the freeway. Now, the
rationale of the common law was that if there were a clue to the ownership of that property, the property is said to be still in the possession of the prior possessor, even though he's lost it. If there's a clue to the ownership, and the person finds it and picks it up, and at that time intends to restore it to the true owner, by picking it up, he's not committing larceny, he's not converting it. But if knowing that there's a clue to the owner, he picks it up, then intending to convert it, he's guilty of larceny. Now, a clue to ownership would be if it's a $1,000 bill, or a rifle with a serial number, or a camera with a name on it, and so forth. A penny, there's no clue to ownership, so you pick it up, no larceny. But if having picked up your $1,000 bill, I later change my mind and decide, no, I won't return it, or won't seek the owner, then I wasn't guilty of larceny because I had no wrongful intent at the time, and that's a lot of malarkey. So this thing says if you don't make a reasonable effort to return it, you're guilty of larceny. And this, in the mistake cases, there have been some, the federal courts have recently found larceny where at common law it wouldn't be. In other words, there's an early Oregon case that on mistake that is contrary to the general law. If you deliver something to me and you think it's a $5 bill and I think it's a $5 bill and it's a mutual mistake and it turns out that it's a $500 bill, if it's a mutual mistake and I don't discover it till later, I obtained the possession physically when I obtained it, when you turned it over. And I had no intent to convert at that time, so I'm not guilty of larceny, even though I later have the intention to do so, even though I later change my mind and desire to hold on to it.
You're saying mutual mistake?
Yeah, mutual mistake and then a unilateral mistake problem. And I think this does away with all of that technical bunch of business. So that if you get something and it isn't yours, and you find out that it isn't yours, you become guilty of a crime unless you really try to turn it back, try to find the owner and get it back. I think this is a does away with an awful lot.
I think it's good. You think it's good?
Well, I think it's good, yeah. It takes care of the situation where the guy goes to the bank and the teller pays over to him $50,000 instead of $5. And this happened down in Alabama with an auto dealer not too long ago. And they convicted him. So it happens, but it strained the common law. He said, no, by golly, I'm going to hang on to it. But he should have returned it. And it wasn't just a civil debt matter. This was an obvious situation.
Right. You didn't think that it possibly was broad enough, Mr. Spaulding. You had some question.
Well, a situation, for instance, where some sales outfit sends you valuable things on trial that you didn't order. That's no mistake. You're a great thing. Should that be larceny for me to take and use that?
Well, I don't think it's larceny, certainly under this Section 3, would be.
No, it wouldn't, and that's what my question is, should it be?
I don't think it should be.
I'm not saying that I do think so, but there's a lot of that done. They send you books once a month. If you don't want it, you don't want to go to the government and send them back, but it could be something of great value.
Where's that covered in the present law? I feel stupid. I don't know where it's covered, but it is covered in the present Oregon law.
There is a provision for that in their campaign about their unsolicited items that come through the mail.
Well, doesn't that, Ed, you look at this through a police officer's eyes, doesn't that really put the police officer in the position of being a collection agency, which he's trying hard enough as it is to stay away from?
Yeah, but he can't stay completely away
from
it.
No, he can't.
No, he can't, but
I don't think there's any statute about that.
I don't think there is.
I've had people ask me that, and I've told them that it's, maybe it's just horseback law, I don't know, but I've told them if you don't want it, don't exercise any control of it, don't use it, you can throw it in the garbage if you want it. But the minute you do anything of value to you with that, then you better pay for it. But you're not obligated to do anything except take it out of your way and throw it in the garbage. I just, there may be, I just was thinking, there may be other relationships which would have more merit than that. That doesn't have much merit.
Uh-huh. Well, it troubled me when I read it for essentially the same reason, but I can see some problems inherent in making it broader. One thing that troubled me, or one thing that I want to raise, is in line 2 of section 3, that he knows, should there or should there not be an insertion, or reasonably should have known.
Yeah.
It depends to some extent what you plan to do with the definition of knowing, or knows, or whatever, in the general. I have a comment, which I kind of say I didn't notice sooner, but I'm looking at the thing, and if you read through it down, you say, first he commits larceny when he wrongfully takes and pays and so forth by acquiring property lost and is later delivered. Isn't there a problem in the logic here? And his crime isn't acquiring the property, it is with the intention to deprive the owner, he fails to take reasonable measures to restore it to the owner.
Well, now there's case law on this.
This particular section, Don, is section 223.5 of the Model Penal Code, Code of Turkey.
Yes,
right.
It's
no shadow.
Right.
It's stated.
Right. Somebody straightened something out in my mind here, and that is, when do we jump from civil law to criminal law? How do you make this distinction? Because I deal with people every day that, since we're under civil law, that have larceny in their heart and they make false official statements and they obtain money that they shouldn't have. And it looks to me like they could be prosecuted under this. And yet, they're not, and I'm sure they couldn't. Mm-hmm.
Fill out a fraudulent claim form and
No, it's just a matter of an exorbitant demand for compensation on a lost article. They deliberately double the size of it and demand compensation twice the amount that they should have. Everyone says, oh, well, no, that isn't quite right. So they go down to maybe just half of an absorbing demand.
There's probably a problem of proof.
Yeah, you'd have here all those situations, ultimately the question of proof is bad.
Mm-hmm. They know perfectly well things as bad as it should be, and yet they're trying to deprive somebody.
Well, I plan to sue for $500,000 of the
darn house is not worth it.
You can't, I don't think you can take care of that by the criminal law.
This is a subjective standard. I mean, that car that I'm driving might only have a high blue book value of $500, but I've had it for 10 years and it got a little sentimental value, and I figure it's worth $1,000.
It's worth what you can get for it if you want to sell it. If you don't want to sell it, it's worth about $4,000.
Yes, that's if you sold it now. But here you're not selling it, you're making a demand for compensation. And, so the demand is well beyond what you can. And you make an official statement to this effect. You make a demand well beyond what you can.
Well, are you including in the official statement a false allegation of fact? If you are, that's one thing. If you're not,
there is a problem we're going to get into this as to whether false statements of law, value, and so forth are sufficient for false pretenses. These are some of the tough ones that we'll have to get to when we get to that point.
That's right. And of course, now section 223.3 of the Model Penal Code has this theft by deception approach, and something I had down here that I wanted to discuss in connection with our their provisions is that he's guilty. He deceives if he purposely creates or reinforces a false impression, including false impressions as to law, value, and merit, even in your type of situation, intention, or other state of mind. Now, my first draft, and of course the second draft also, has a section on largely by false promise. And as I went back through this and gave further thought to it, I was wondering whether or not we might be better off and by having a broader provision in there, such as the theft by deception rather than false promise, which if I read the Model Penal Code provision correctly, would include the false promise type of conduct. The original intention of this Section 7, as appears in the second draft here, the intent there was to do away with this distinction between representation of present or existing or past or existing facts and cover the future type of conduct. Which is covered now. I agree with you. We need something in addition to this Section 7. My thought was that I feel that the section we have in there now on bad checks, although initially I felt the New York approach was a good one, I think on more mature reflection on the thing, I think that perhaps we might be better off to take that out of there and have a section on largely by deception, which inferentially could cover a bad check offense, although not spelling it out in so many words. Theft by deception could include larceny by the use of a bad check, and then defer the bad check provision as such until we get into the section on fraudulent type crimes, which are not covered as such in this draft now.
You mean like forgery?
Forgery, yes, that type of crime. But and it would seem to me that this type of section would cover the type of conduct that Representative Eldridge talked about. Whereas I don't think this false promise section would do it.
Let me make two observations. First, I don't want to completely, before we move on to that, I don't want to completely lose hold of what we started out on with regard to lost and misled property. Now, we didn't make a decision on that, did we? On lost and misled property. We'll come back to that in just a minute because our attention is focusing more on what you just discussed. But let's not get any further away from lost or misled property than this for the time being. On this theft by deception, the more I look at this, and this is completely subjective, the more enamored I am with the suggestion that was made at the last meeting that we go to theft rather than larceny, the more I look at the whole picture, go to the use of the generic
term
theft rather than larceny, and this is going to be something we can talk about later. But the thing that troubles me about this theft by deception thing, and I'm basically prosecution-minded, is the absence of any necessity for corroborating evidence. Not that it isn't good, and not that it isn't necessary. But I see all sorts of ramifications. So maybe, like the necessity for a false token, which is a separate statutory requirement now. Maybe. But were you suggesting, Don, that theft by deception be made a subsection of larceny here?
Yes. two reasons. One, I think it could incorporate the provisions that we have for false promise now.
Make it broader?
Yes, it would do that, but it would also make it broad enough that I think that we, without expanding on it at this point, I think there's some problems with leaving this bad check section in. We'll talk about later, but I think that in reading the comments of Kennedy's draft, I think it's number 2 of the Model Penal Code there, I think that their thought was that this theft by deception would cover the bad check type of conduct.
Though, on page 178 of this so-called proposed legal draft, they've got a bad check statute that's a little tougher than our present one, go a little further.
Yeah, and that's a... of course, that's a separate, and that appears under their forgery and fraudulent practices.
Yeah, yeah.
And not as part of their larceny or theft draft. So. See what I'm getting at? That they have not included bad checks per se as theft.
Hmm.
But I think that their intent was, under their section on theft by deception, that this could include.
Oh, sure. It includes the bad check where you actually obtain something. It's false pretenses by a bad check. Whereas in the later section, that's our present NSF check where you don't get anything. You just draw on that one.
All right. My offhand reaction is that the suggestion is a good one. So why don't you again? For our next meeting, if it meets with the consensus of the committee, endeavor to redraft Section 7 to make it broader and to cover theft by deception. In line with Representative Elder's comments, and why don't you eliminate issuing a bad check? As provided by Section 5, and reserve that for the section that we're going to consider next with regard to fraud, uttering, this is what you were suggesting.
Yes, it was. And I wanted to first find out what the subcommittee thought about.
Does everyone resolve the problem in their mind? Everybody on the subcommittee here? It still bothers me, and though I should be prosecution minded too, but you know, doggone it, there may have been a lot of wisdom in this business of meeting a token. You know?
Oh, yeah, I think there is, and I.
Doggone it, you get into this, it's an awfully gray area.
This is going to be something you're going to have to be prepared for a barrage on when you submit your tentative draft again.
Well, let me say this. I don't think that this draft, even though we eliminate the technical distinctions between larceny and obtaining, I don't think this draft is going to eliminate the necessity at the time of trial for a prosecutor who has charged larceny by obtaining under false pretenses for still having a false token. I don't think that does that.
Well, can't you make the draft specific to be sure that it doesn't?
Be sure that it does not?
Yeah, it does not eliminate.
What do you think about that?
Well, I don't know. This is a policy matter, a practical policy matter that I've. For the time being, I'd sure rather refer to a practical man that has experience with it. Again, I'm stuck. You see, I get off in an ivory tower of never mind. You're teaching me all the time, and you get a hypothetical situation you've got to get over to students. And I really don't know how my judgment is there. There's a California case, for instance, that where a guy got some money from a gal, and he said he'd give her a first mortgage on a certain piece of property. They gave her a first mortgage on nothing, so it amounted to this was a false promise case. But
He just said he would do it. There was no, no token, no writing, no nothing. And
what's corroboration in a case like that? Is that the fact that the transaction occurred, though, and that she was in fact gypped? I guess that's is that considered to be corroboration?
Well, I don't know that they didn't have this false token statute, and they didn't have the necessity of the kind of corroboration down there.
Well, was that a charge of obtaining money by false pretense?
Yeah. It was a charge of grand theft, and in California, grand theft includes obtaining money by false pretenses.
I feel sure you need the statute. I feel sure you need to protect people from that sort of thing. Also feel you need to protect people from just wild, unsubstantiated charges that people find themselves in court for really no good reason sometimes. Guarantee that you have a prima facie case before you ever get to court.
I think you're right. And this
you'd have a prima facie case if you didn't need false token.
This model penal code tries to kind of do something about it by saying, but deception as to a person's intention to perform a promise shall not be inferred from the fact alone that he did not subsequently perform the promise. That's pretty abstract, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But this is what they're where they're trying to answer your fear.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's satisfying. I'm not helpful here.
Well, you see, I've been through this many times. Mm-hmm. You need the false token for OMFP, but you don't need the false token for larceny by trick. That's right, Capital. And we're going to throw in here a specific section on theft by deception, and we're going to require a false token, which I incidentally favor. I just think that there has to be some corroborative evidence, so the DA knows what he's doing, somebody doesn't get railroaded from the other side. But we're going to require a false token for theft by deception. But we're going to go back up here and we're going to say larceny includes what heretofore has been larceny by trick. We're not making any requirements for a false token there. So I see where we're perpetuating, to a certain extent, the present dilemma that some of the people are in.
Maybe my theory falls on it. Have they a statute in any state where there isn't a requirement for a token of the property of evidence and for to approve larceny?
New York doesn't mention it, but does the New York court say that they have to have it?
Well, you don't need it for larceny.
Taking money by false pretenses, you do.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think where I read, whether it was in the New York comments or not, but there has been some case law on this that has come subsequent to a revision where you've eliminated the purpose of the revision was to eliminate these technical distinctions. And in prosecution for larceny by obtaining under false pretenses, the court did hold that you still need the false token. I can't.
I really argued about some of the courts you're going to solve for us anyway.
Well, they're going to solve if we need the right statute. They're going to interpret the statute.
Mm-hmm.
You can't tell us whether or not in those instances there was another statute retained with respect to false token.
The comment
is
a little bit loophole. Tried to eliminate this, notwithstanding our elimination of court supplied it, which makes it sound as if they hadn't left the statute.
And the model penal code has a comment on that. I'm not sure which draft it's in. It seems it was in draft 1 or 2. But
larceny by trick. Actually, there are very few prosecutions for larceny by trick, isn't there, right?
Yeah.
I never did have one when I was a prosecutor that I could ever remember.
Well, in a couple of those termite fraud cases, we had to go by on larceny by trick because the defendants made representation to the old lady, had her pay him, and then came back a month later and said they were police officers and they were gathering the evidence, in which she please give them the canceled checks, which she did, you see. And so we did. We got around the necessity for a false hope on a larceny by trick theory. We're going to get hung up on this, I think, if we sit and speculate. But I'm sure we're all aware how tough the problem this is. So let's prepare that. Also, Don, in your revised draft for us at our next subcommittee meeting, and let's direct our attention back to lost and mislaid property. Get that out of there.
Well, now, just so I understand what we have in the minutes here, probably what it is you want done on this next draft, I think if you want a section on theft by deception, and also to spell out that, there would be a requirement for a false token under the obtaining, under larceny by obtaining.
My thought is that we put in a section for theft by deception, and incorporate in that a requirement for a false token. Now, how this is going to run head on into our fraud section, I can't reconcile right at this time. And I'm not prepared to say how this is going to affect what you're going to do with 2A up here. When you're going to knock out, or you're going to consider making larceny by trick, for example, included. Larceny definition. I'm not suggesting that we need a false token for larceny by trick, but maybe we do. This is what law enforcement officers keep telling me in this day and age of the more and more sophisticated criminal, that the false token requirement is a hindrance.
No question about that.
And I think it is. But also, I think that when we're talking about abstract things like theft by deception, such as is in the model penal code draft, we better have a little bit more evidence in that instance than me saying, well, Bruce Bawley told me he was going to do this or so, and he didn't, and that's it, and you believe me and don't believe him. So, Tom?
Yes.
So you're going to go over 1, 2, 2A, 2C, the bad check, 2E, the false promise, and let's go back to 2B, acquiring property lost, mislaid, or delivered by mistake, as provided in Section 3. Now, Kathleen, you said that.
About the use of
acquiring?
Does
the committee wish to re-refer this to the staff to investigate whether Mr. Spalding's suggestion...
No, I think that my suggestion can be eliminated too, because I think in the section.
All right, what about the suggestion with respect to knows or reasonably should have known? Is this a criminal or a civil standard? And,
didn't somebody say that that was taken care of in some definition?
General definition of knowingly.
I'm raising a question as to whether it should be knowingly
known,
I think it
will take you one. We're on page 2. Then we're in draft. Section 3, the second line. Control of property of another that he knows.
Now, our present definition of knowingly imports only a knowledge that the facts exist which bring the act or omission within the provision of the criminal statute. It does not require any knowledge of the unlawfulness of the act or omission. It does nothing to this point that you're raising.
Well, now, the amount of people that eventually gets to this kind of thing, when it says requirement of knowledge satisfied by knowledge of high probability, when knowledge of the existence of a particular fact is an element of an offense, such knowledge is established if a person is aware of a high probability of its existence, unless he actually believes that it does not exist. And
that's a reasonable cause to believe, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Based on probability.
And you can't bore a hole in his head, so you prove his high probability, if he's aware of a high probability of its existence, you prove this by the objective facts, by proving that there was a serial number or that it was $1,000 worth of a penny. And
but they are incorporating, I'd say, by that definition, the idea of knows or has reasonable cause to know.
I think they are.
I
think so.
Because, like I say, it's a subjective thing.
Yeah. This is something we're going to deal with all the way along.
Now they're statutorily incorporating that, aren't they?
Yeah. By defining, they define knowledge in one place, then they say requirement of knowledge satisfied by knowledge of high probability in another place.
Well, now most of this is cured by instruction. As far as your uttering statute, doesn't say knows or reasons you should have known, but the judge instructs on that. Below, in 165.045, the receiving and concealing statute, as an example, where it's put in, it says any person who buys, receives, conceals, or attempts to conceal any displayed property, knowing or having good reason to believe that it was stolen. So our present statutes are inconsistent, and where they're not consistent, the courts handle this by instruction. My thought is we should strive for consistency, if possible, in our drafts, and not leave it up for an appellate decision if some court fails to make the proper instruction.
Would it solve part of this problem in future drafts? And I know there's a good committee working on it, but if at the beginning of the draft, for instance, we were to list and say, we are assuming herein that the following phrases are being defined as part of the general law, and then not a thing, we are assuming that you define them thus or so, but at least to indicate where these questions come up. Such as property is one of the phrases we've already read this morning. Knowledge is another one. I'm sure we're going to run into, well, malice, I know, is involved in some of these. We're assuming that these are to be defined, however that may be. So it wouldn't be infringing on another committee, but at least it would let you know in reading it that some places in the general law, these terms are to be taken care of, so you're not concerned with that. Yikes, should we put it in here? And it may be a point for them also in considering what terms they think should be defined as to whether or not these lists turn out to agree.
Well, I think when we get to terms such as knowledge and willfulness and intent, this type of thing, it's certainly a terms that are going to have to be defined for the purposes of the complete criminal code.
Do you want to skip over this with that comment, or do you want to?
When will we have a general committee meeting? May that be a good subject of discussion for a general meeting and get that one?
I don't think we can really place it in perspective, though, until the subcommittees have completed their work and we can put these things in perspective.
They won't throw this out of complete focus. Mm-hmm.
abstract it, later we find that that is sufficiently defined.
Sure, because whatever this subcommittee or any of the other subcommittees come up with in the way of tentative drafts are going to have to be adopted by the full commission.
Yeah, and this will just flag it as something new. We'll be looking for ways to shorten it anyway.
Alright, so shall we not insert that he knows any person comes to control property of another that he knows
or has good reason to
know. Has good reason to know.
I think that's the same as in that chain.
Okay, does that meet with the consensus? Okay, are any members, anybody, concerned about the language in the last clause of Section 3 or fails to take reasonable measures to restore the property to the owner?
I'm not concerned about it. Now, maybe I'm not practical enough, but I think the case in Alabama where the guy withdraws everything he has in the bank and he's got $40 and the teller gives him $40,000, that's perfectly unreasonable and he should have taken it back. A colored man in San Francisco found $27,000 on the street and I think he did take it back, but that kind of thing. If I find a dollar bill on the street and make I think that a jury or a judge sitting as the trier of the fact could handle this as a practical matter of good judgment. I'm not too worried about it.
On a case-by-case basis.
If I receive a darn hat tie in the mail, it wasn't sent to me by mistake.
Oh.
It was just a merchandising gimmick, and I don't think there's any crime if I even take it and wear it.
If it's a dollar tie, I don't think so. If somebody was stupid enough to send you a $100 raffle, this would be, of course, another color, but if it's a dollar tie, I can't conceive of that as anybody thinking it's criminal.
Okay.
Well, it wouldn't come under this 2B, because it wasn't sent by mistake.
Yeah. So that just be the merchandiser's hard luck.
Okay. Shall we approve Section 3?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, take note, thus far, Section 3 is the only thing that we've approved on this second page. Now, let's go to D. D, which is extortion. And that refers us to Section 6. A person obtains property by extortion when he compels or induces another person to deliver such property to himself or to a third person by means of instilling in him a fear that if the property is not so delivered, the actor or another will one through not. Now, why not the model penal code definitions, okay? Page 169. Simply, a person is guilty of theft by extortion if he obtains property of another by threatening to.
I'm looking at the additional material in Don's draft over in the larceny section, not in the definition section, in which a person obtains property because he refuses to deliver.
That's New York.
Well, that's what I'm looking at, the white paper copy, which is Don's draft, which is what I was working from.
And that initial draft, that follows the New York approach to it rather than the model penal code. substance, there's much difference between the two. I think that it seemed to me that the New York approach differentiated between larceny by extortion, by the language they used. They made a clear distinction between this and robbery. In other words, the model penal code uses language, if he obtains property of another by threatening to inflict bodily injury on anyone or commit any other crime. Well, it seems to me that that language can amount to robbery. If you obtain property of another by threatening to inflict bodily injury, that would include a threat to commit an imminent threat. In other words, a threat to inflict bodily injury now or in the immediate future, rather than in the future, as extortion would and should be, it seems to me. That I don't think that the language in the model penal code draws that distinction well enough. In other words, they don't use future. They don't use the physical injury to the person threatened in the future. And if they don't, if you just say that you obtain property by threatening to inflict bodily injury, that's robbery, it seems to me. Or it can be robbery. Take property from a person by threatening to inflict bodily harm on them. That's robbery, not larceny. And the New York approach seems to me was just a better one for that reason, mainly.
This makes sense. And both of them take care of I threaten that I'll throw acid in your daughter's face. This some person takes care of that. It's somebody, includes somebody other than the person who...
Mm-hmm. Yes. You're right.
Yeah. Now, in the model penal code, doesn't necessarily imply a completed act, does it? A person is guilty of theft if he obtains property by threatening to. Well, yeah, it does imply.
You have to
obtain the property. All right. But when we look at the threat, you can threaten somebody with extortion without instilling fear in him, can't you? By attempting to instill fear in him?
Yes, but it doesn't cause him to say it or deliver it. Or
unless he really has it.
Yeah, that has to be the reason he delivers the property.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you're the defendant and you have obtained property because of this threat, then you would commit larceny. But if you don't obtain any property, you might commit something else, but you wouldn't commit any larceny.
You can scare the hell out of them and don't make it work when you're not guilty.
That's good.
The model penal code makes theft by extortion require that you get the property, and robbery doesn't make it necessary that you get the property. An act should be deemed in the course of committing a theft if it occurs in an attempt to commit theft or implied after the attempt to commission. Get us off the horse there. That had nothing to do with what we're doing now.
What's our present law on extortion?
Well, it's just a threat now. Yeah, you don't have to get anything.
What's the statute now? That satisfies me. I hesitate to bring these things up until later, but 163.480. Any person who verbally or by any written or framed communication threatens any injury. Well, that's something else.
Well, several of those, that one you were just talking about, several of those involve
or
the ones I'm speaking of involve the line or two in there that involves the lacking by extortion.
Yeah. Perfect.
mentioned this in our last meeting, that we want to be careful here that if we adopt the crime of larceny by extortion as part of our theft statute, that if we want to continue to have a crime in the state of Oregon to threaten the injury, in other words, what amounts to extortion under our present statute, that's going to have to be picked up someplace else along the line. Because it would not amount, if we repealed 163.480, for example, by adopting this, we would have a type of conduct that wouldn't be covered strictly by this.
Unless they wasn't covered.
Yeah, right. Unless it could be, it might be covered as an attempt.
Or it would be covered if this were the present law.
Yeah.
This would come in the section of crimes against persons, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Well, there's a provision in the model penal code for terroristic threats, a separate provision apart from larceny by apart from theft by extortion. Now, you're sure right. There undoubtedly ought to be something wrong with it.
I don't know technically whether it's a crime against persons or crime against
terroristic threats, crime against persons.
Well,
this would be picked up.
Endangering and threat.
So if we adopt larceny by extortion and eliminate 163.480, we can pick up the thrust of 163.480 in the section or chapter on crime against persons. All right, well now...
Well, is there such a thing that you can't have an attempted larceny?
Under the present law, you can't have it.
Yeah, well, you haven't attempted anything under the present law.
We'll probably have a general provision.
Be under your inchoate.
Inchoate crime, yeah.
Inchoate crimes.
Right. What about bill collectors?
Well, that's what I was going to say here. And what about this situation? If a mother of a child or an expected illegitimate child tells the guy, you pay my hospital bills and other things that are usually required to be paid, or we bring them back to the proceeding. She's guilty of extortion. Under section 5, where that's true.
Well, now, when we get to our draft on defenses, this is covered, at least I hope it is. That it would be a defense, an affirmative defense, that the defendant reasonably believed the threatened charge to be true, and that his sole purpose was to compel or induce the victim to take reasonable action to make good the wrong which was the subject of the threatened charge.
Does this put the burden on the defendant to plead it and prove it, and therefore do away with this Fifth Amendment protections?
Well, of course, any of these defenses, the burden's going to be on the defendant to raise it, to raise the defense. But the burden isn't going to be shifted to the defendant to prove that this beyond a reasonable doubt.
The element of burden of persuasion stays in the prosecution.
Sure. And we have case law now in Oregon on this question of claim of right, where it's the burden is, they don't say it's the burden's on the defendant in so many words, but the thrust of the opinion is defendant has to inject this into the case.
For instance, in the defense of self-defense to murder, for instance, if the defendant asserts that defense and has some evidence to tie on to, then the court will instruct the jury that it is up to the state to prove that it was not self-defense and prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. That's what you mean.
Yes.
Sometimes it gets hard to make quite a speech about that.
Well, so you think that the paternity example, the bill collector, whoever,
is a valid bill, and there's no problem with this. Yeah.
It's going to be covered by the defense.
Well, I think so.
That same thing, that same thought has been true with our present statutes, that if somebody, some bill collector goes too far, why they can scare them off by this thing.
Okay.
In case the woman has two prospective fathers, that is both of them.
Well, when she had a reasonable grounds to believe both of them. Maybe three of them.
But as long as she speaks the truth, she's all right.
She believed in the one time or other.
Okay.
And then let's run down the subsections here on six. Cause physical injury to some person in the future. Or cause damage to property. Why don't you put in the future on that?
Well, I think I didn't question it quite that closely, but doesn't the verb tense will imply the act is in the future?
Then leave in the future off on number one.
Yeah, I'm just wondering whether it should be added on one or taken off together.
What do we do?
I'd take it off from number one.
We could take it off from number one and put it up in the main paragraph up there.
Well, we've got the word will up there.
That's the slice of
Well, I don't think will. Now, here again, this brings me back to my comment, the distinction I think we should make clear between larceny by extortion and robbery. And that is, you could say that. You just have the language that the actor or another will cause physical injury. That could mean imminently.
Yeah, but it's in the future in either event. It's in the future, right, you know, 10 seconds from now or 10 hours from now. It's still in the future. If that's our problem, then I think maybe we need the word imminently or whatever the opposite is.
Yeah, as distinguished from then, taken away from it.
That it's future.
That's right. No question about it. DA charges me with larceny by extortion for taking $100 off you at gunpoint, or robbery for taking $100 off you at gunpoint. That carries a life sentence. Might say, no, that's larceny by extortion. It carries a 5-year sentence. State versus Clinton. DA arbitrates discretion and statutes unconstitutional. We've got to resolve that, don't we? Any person who robs, steals, or takes from the person of another, that's a present rather than a future tense, so maybe it is a problem.
This doesn't seem to make a problem, I don't know. If people are sick for extortion, then they're fine.
I don't think Perky goes quite that far. Do you?
I don't think there's a Perky problem either. Because I don't think there's a Perky problem here any more than there is a Perky problem in shoplifting and larceny in a store.
I'm murdered in the first degree, I'm murdered in the second.
I think in Kirby you have the problem where there could be the unbridled discretion to choose between a felony and a misdemeanor.
Well, Al Davidson agreed with me Tuesday that Wade was quite as broad as I thought it would be.
All right.
Well, shall we then delete in the future from sub 1 and go on, cause physical injury to some person or cause
damage? It might help to add after the word will up there, so it would apply to all of these subsections, the words in the future will in the future.
All right, so move and adopt. Will in the future. Delete in the future on 1. Cause damage to property or engage in other conduct constituting a crime. Any problem?
Then you have to define the future.
I don't think it is.
I have a stencil, but. New York, model penal code doesn't have it.
Well, it has a little bit of it, I think, Mr. Chairman. It says, inflict bodily injury on anyone or commit any other criminal offense.
Well,
I think
that makes a little bit more sense to me. Commit a criminal offense rather than engage in conduct constituting a crime. In other words, I say, you don't deliver the money to me, I'm going to go